Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my great joy to serve this conscientious and loving congregation. And you are welcome here, however you are today, whoever you are today. You are welcome here if you are really excited that tomorrow you will wake up and the sun will be out earlier. And you are welcome if you are pretty depressed because it will get darker earlier this afternoon. You are welcome here if you have turned off the news. And you are welcome here if you just can't stop watching and analyzing each poll for them to try to understand the future. And you're welcome here if you voted, or if you're still waiting to put your ballot in the ballot box. You are welcome here if you are joyful, if you are centered, if you're anxious, or if you're sad. You are welcome here because you are a beloved child of the earth, and you are welcome wherever you go. If you are visiting with us and this is your first time or several times and would just like more information on how to engage with our community, we have many small groups who are meeting these days, please go to our website and write our administrator and get on our email list and get links to our coffee hour. If you are really anxious about the election, which I think pretty much fits everyone, and would like some grounding and sustenance next week, there are many opportunities to gather with other Unitarian Universalists during the week. And you can find out more information in the e-blast, in the bulletin that came with coffee hour, and in my letter that I sent you last week, and on our Facebook page. The most important thing that I want you to know is that next week we are going to do our service live at 10:30 in Zoom. And so you're going to get a link at 10 o'clock, like you usually do, that you can come into a Zoom room at 10:30. We will record it for people who can't watch at 10:30, so don't worry. We're doing this because it seems like next week might be fast-moving in what's occurring, and if I write a sermon on Thursday, it might not really be appropriate on Sunday. So we just want to try this live and see how it is for us. So I will see you next week at 10:30 in Zoom. Now I will light the chalice. The flame of our chalice is the color of this rising and setting sun. Let it remind us of the miracles of energy and of life. Let it remind us of the cycles of dark and light, in the transforming seasons of our own lives. Let it remind us that we join together each week in love and in faith. Spirit of love and life, let us breathe. Let us breathe deeply. Let us breathe, pulling air into our deep into our bellies. And let it release it out as slowly as we ever can. Spirit of love and life, be with us as we wait. As we wait to know who will be our next president, who will hold the Senate, to find out if Portland will vote a police oversight board that really holds police accountable. As we wait to know about so many races and ballot measures that will affect our lives and the lives of so many Americans. Be with us as we wait to know how long it will take before we learn who wins, what the courts will decide, if the streets will be full of people, if there will be shooting. Be with us as we wait to know how we will be asked to show up for the compassionate, diverse, justice-filled, joyful America that we dream of. Amen. Let us now take a moment to say into the silence the names of people we are most holding in our hearts today. We are entering the time of year when death prevails. The living leaves of trees are going red and yellow and orange, and soon they will fall to the ground, dead. They will become food for bacteria and fungus and break apart, their molecules prepared to be something else. All those bright green sprouts of flowers and vegetables that poked so hopefully from the soil in the spring have lived their whole lives, growing large, making fruit. And now they have died, or will soon. Over the next month, animals in the wild will struggle to find food, and some will die. So in these days, between the September fall equinox and the December winter solstice, it is our tradition, and it has been many people's traditions across the centuries and cultures, to remember our beloved dead. This year, however, feels different than the other years we performed this ritual. Death has haunted us since March, when we faced that a brand new virus, the first time anyone had heard of it was in December in China, had spread across the world, including to Portland. We knew almost nothing about this virus, including how it spread, how to treat it, and how likely people were to die of it. The governor ordered us all home, and we went. We washed our hands. And after a time, we all started wearing masks. We watched as infections spiked and hospitals filled. We watched the numbers of deaths tick upwards. As I write this, about 230,000 Americans have died from COVID-19, and nearly 1.2 million people have died worldwide. Or those are the official counts. People debate whether COVID deaths are overcounted or undercounted. We do know, however, that as of October 15th, the United States had 300,000 more deaths this year than in previous years. That's a lot more death. Each person leaves behind grieving families, friends, and communities. And now, of course, winter is coming. In ordinary years, death rates go up during the winter. On average, 30,000 people die of the flu. Other dies of things that people die of. But somehow, during the times of dark cold, our bodies are more likely to stop sustaining life. Already, as the days cool and darken, when winter has not even arrived, COVID-19 deaths are escalating across the Northern Hemisphere. Death is one of the saddest and most difficult parts of life. Life is the most precious gift that any of us has ever given. We did not earn our lives. We did nothing to make our lives happen. Our lives simply came into being. We arrived. It is a miracle that we can never repay. But there's a catch. It is a gift that is not forever. We must die. That's how the cycle of life on Earth works. We die, so the matter of our bodies can become new life, offering that precious gift to someone else. Perhaps our matter becomes a tree or a hummingbird, or as in this morning's story, a new pumpkin. Each of us is going to die. Every person we love is going to die. We will slip away from our bodies, and all we have known will disappear into the mystery. This might happen after years of a robust life, or it might not. We don't know how or when. We have no control over that. But each of us will die. During ordinary times, most of us hold that knowledge lightly, nearly in denial. We make plans and organize our lives as if death was so far away. This year, though, death seems closer. Severe illness and death are daily news. It's more difficult to deny the possibility of our own death or the death of those we love. There's a Buddhist story that I really love. It's called The Mustard Seed. In this story, a young mother loses her son. He is everything to her. He is her whole entire life. And she is stricken with the most dreadful grief. She goes into the streets and she's asking people everywhere for medicine to bring her child to life, who she's carrying in her arms. Everyone thinks she's crazy. But a kind man takes her to the Buddha. And she falls down on her knees before them and asks, "Can you bring medicine to bring my child back to life?" And he said, "It is possible." And she was delighted. He said, "But you need to bring me a mustard seed from a household that has not experienced grief." She was still delighted. That had to be fairly easy. So she started going through town, knocking on door after door. And the person behind each door described to her a death that was very sad in their own lives. And after a while, she came to recognize that her loss, while extremely painful and awful, was ordinary, that everyone experiences death and grief. And she went on to become a Buddhist monk. We are people. We are made to love. We make bonds, and when the bonds snap and someone is gone, it hurts a lot. And we grieve. We really grieve. This year's service of remembrance feels more weighted to me, not only because of the closeness of death, but because we are all grieving. We've been grieving for months. We grieve when someone dies. We also grieve, however, when something or someone we love is torn from us. We grieve the loss of gathering in physical community, with this congregation, with our friends and with our family. We grieve the loss of routines, traveling, and plans that we made for this year that were canceled. We grieve the loss of exercise classes, favorite restaurants and coffee shops, concerts, festivals, plays, dances, sporting events, conferences, birthday parties, reunions, and all the other activities with joyful crowds. We also grieve for all the beautiful places lost to fire. We grieve the loss of environmental and labor regulations that cared for the earth and people that were passed in the last 4 years. We grieve for children still separated from their parents, for the undocumented, and other Americans held without cause in for-profit detention centers, and for those brutalized by the police. Some of us might also be grieving for what could happen. The loss of reproductive rights, of same-sex marriage, of voting rights, and the rights of labor and the environment. This is a lot to hold. But it's also really important to acknowledge it. It is good to remember that if we are not feeling well or doing our best, that might be because we hold so much grief. our conscious and our unconscious selves are dealing with so much. Grief is a very odd emotion. It comes and it goes. I'm sure most of you have experienced this. We think we're doing fine, and then suddenly we're flooded with sadness, or an inability to concentrate, or irritability, or exhaustion. It can flatten us, or make us rage with anger or tears. Grief is the thing that happens as our bodies painstakingly restructure our psychic being so we can live with new realities. Grief is how we heal from loss. As challenging as going through grief might be, it is our body's wisdom to bring us back to a new state of wholeness. COVID grief is really complicated by its ambiguousness. There is this promise of the return of what was lost, but no one knows how or when or if it will really look like it did in the past. The grief of living in a country that appears at least judicially unlikely to express our values and actually cause active harm to people and the environment is also an ambiguous grief. It is ongoing, changing in form, slippery, but always tempered by hope that we can do something to make things better. Ambiguous grief is more difficult for us to work through than grief that is very clear in form, such as a death, or a divorce, or a lost job. One blessing is that experts say that the simple act of naming our ambiguous grief can help us work through it and heal. So perhaps a thing to do might be to write down or share with a friend everything that you have lost and been grieving since this pandemic began. Write down everything that has been lost during the 4 years of a Trump presidency, and what you fear might be lost with a conservative Supreme Court and federal judiciary. You need to acknowledge your losses to help heal. But also know that you're not alone in your grief. Others share it. Reach out to the people you are closest to and share your losses and grief. Reach out to other people in our beloved community and share your losses and grief. That is one reason we gather together. Experts say that connecting with people we care about is another way we heal from our losses. Let your loved one share their grief as well. Promise each other you won't say things like, "But other people have it worse," or I don't have much to complain about, or "I am managing," or "Actually, there's some really nice things about this pandemic." Those statements might be absolutely true, and that's a good thing. But it doesn't mean that you haven't lost anything. It doesn't mean you're not grieving. It doesn't mean that you're not sad. We need to let our bodies, minds, emotions, and souls work through our grief. This is an essentially human way of healing and adjusting to new realities so that we can face them, ready to be who we need to be in this new world we live in. So we come to this day of remembrance, heavier with death, the possibility of death, and grief than we do in an ordinary year. It's good to remember now, more than ever, some of the important meanings of this particular ritual. Each year we remind ourselves that death is normal. We will all die. Everyone we love will die. That's how life works. It cycles our atoms and molecules forever into creative new forms. Each year we remind ourselves that we all grieve, That's what humans do when loss happens. We cry out in anguish. We are sad. We get disoriented and exhausted. And eventually we heal. Each year we remind ourselves that love never dies. We share photos of people we've loved who have gone on. We recognize the way that those people and our love for them still matter. It's more difficult to lay one's ambiguous losses on the altar. But that grief and its healing still beats with love. There is the love of our lives, of people, of experiences, of nature and of tradition. There is our love of justice, compassion, truth, our country, and the earth that sustains our lives. This love does not die. Love is there as we grieve and we heal. Love is there when we reach out to others. Love is there as we create a new life and a new world. Love never dies. Let us never forget this truth, and let it hold us no matter what happens in the days that come. Amen.
We share these words by the Reverend Mark Bellantini. Some of us remember with pleasure aunts, uncles, fathers, mothers, friends and lovers, cousins and neighbors, other times and other places, cities and farms, homesteads and rooms, yellow sunsets, chilly sunrises. Some of us find it hard to remember, for the memories that clamor inside us are jagged, like glass we ourselves did not break. Some of us remember people we have never met, but who through history, recent events, book, poem, film, and painting have met us and entered the secret chambers of our heart. Some of us remember children and cannot be comforted. Some of us remember and are set free in our thanksgiving. Some of us remember and are tight with guilt or shame. Some of us struggle daily to remember with greater charity. Some of us weep easily and often. Others weep rarely, but grieve all the same. Some of us are stoic and say, these things happen. Some of us rail against the unfairness of it all and clench teeth and fists with discontent. Some of us bear the burden of those who took their own lives or who suffered greatly at the end. Others among us remember only vast meadows of love and charity in which we played with joy. But all of us remember, whether we speak or are silent, whether we deny or affirm, whether we love or find it hard to love. May the power of love embrace us all as the curtains between then and now are drawn open for a moment and the fullness of life impresses itself on us, each in our own way.
Our benediction is from Judith Anderson. Remember us. You who are living, restore us, renew us, speak for our silence, continue our work, bless the breath of life, sing of the hidden patterns, weave the web of peace. And now we will extinguish our chalice. We extinguish our flame, but not the warmth of inspiration of our faith, nor our commitment to its principles. We will carry these until we meet again.